And welcome all to all of you who are listening and joining us. Tonight's radio show has the... I want to say hi to Randy and welcome you to the show, Randy. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, thanks, David. Hi, and hello everybody else out there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's always so funny. Pretty soon I want to start actually doing call-ins so that people can talk to us, because it's funny talking to yourself and with not knowing if people are out there. Although I hear we've got quite a few listeners now. So I talked with Randy about setting the intention for this show, and when I think of Randy, the first thing I think of is interconnectedness, the interconnectedness of everything in the universe. And from the classes that Randy has taught at the school, that's the main thing that I get out of the classes is, well, there's really two things: the interconnectedness of everything, and including not only ourselves and everything in the universe, but every cell in our body and every cell and everything in the universe, on a small level to micro to macro. But also the thing that I love about Randy is he's got just he really connects with everything that let me put it this way, with infinite possibility of using your consciousness to change the world, to change yourself, and to change, help raise consciousness on the planet. How's that for an introduction there?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody I'm familiar with. That's good.
Cool.
Thank you.
So the intention we thought of is interconnectedness of ancient past and the future. So that intention is what I'll keep focusing on and bringing us back to. And it's interesting, it's interesting because whenever I think of an intention, I always think of what is the sound of that intention. And it's a really, when I think of it, it's a very deep sound, because it's a sound. Oh, God. Just a second. It's a sound that goes from over eternity. So it's I think of it as the almost the large horn. I forget what the horn's called. Karma Moffat plays one. Do you know what that was?
I forgot the name of that big Tibetan one.
Yeah, like about 10 foot long.
Right.
Seems like there's something. It's just a really long, deep sound. Anyway, that's the feeling I get of this intention. So, first of all, Randy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and yourself and your. Well, the reason you're here on the planet.
Well, I come from in this life having been a university instructor in music and teaching popular and jazz music and world music, and been a professional performer for way over 40 years up till 1998, where I started at that point shifted into a lot more of the research and teaching more of the esoteric and exoteric studies and focusing on sound and sound healing more than my previous performance. But I've played with lots of well-known groups in the jazz and world music arena, playing trumpet, piano, and guitar and percussion were my primary instruments. Played with Hejoli Sounds from Ghana for 15 years, the National Band of Ghana, and groups from Brazil, and Charlie Bird, Gal Jader, Tito Puente, Lou Harrison, who used to live around the corner from me until he passed away a couple of years ago, who was a specialist in microtonal music and also interesting Asian music. So my interests were also as a jazz musician and played gospel music and many different types of rock and pop throughout my years. But over that period of time, began to look at, well, how does sound really work? And the more I get into sound, I was wanting to have a more far-reaching impact with what I was doing than the performance mediums that I was in. So I started really getting into the nature of sound and the nature of tone. And then somewhere along the line in the last 15 years, well, since the 80s, got into sacred geometry, and now I have two tracks, the musical track and the geometric track, and they talk to each other. So I'm blending the knowledge of sacred relationships in music and sacred relationships and forms that we see in the geometric expressions in the world together and the dynamics between those two. And those are the primary thrust of my work at this point.
What's you know, when I was talking to Tom Kenyon a couple weeks ago, he said that the Hathors taught him the relationship between sacred geometry and sound.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I took a workshop from him a number of years ago, and we were actually going to do some projects in sacred geometry and sound at that time. And then his work with the Hathors and his lecture schedule became so busy, we never got back to it.
Uh-huh.
So, but I hope maybe in the future we could do some things in that regard.
What can you give us an idea? What is the nature? How does sacred geometry or any geometry and sound relate? What's the main way that it relates?
Well, I would say first, in not using the word sacred, if we use the word archetypal, and
uh-huh.
then we use the word the type of geometry that creation uses that you see all over the created world. As the formative patterns of all the proportions in plants, animals, species, planets, orbits, everything from the micro to the macro, that's what I include in sacred geometry as opposed to just geometry associated with temples or religions or certain belief systems or certain kind of what people call sacred sites. I see the whole universe as a sacred site. And then I've noticed that And in the Pythagorean teachings and other mystery schools in the past, they taught geometry as primary subjects. So what you get in all of that are certain proportions and relationships from one thing to another that also in the world of sound and in the world of harmonics that parallel what's going on in geometry. Then there's a place where, of course, sounds hold and create spaces where geometrical shapes appear. And this is what we see in what they call cymatics or kymatics. It can be pronounced either way,
uh-huh.
where sound is put into different kinds of forms of powders or liquids and so on, and you see a geometric pattern occur. And
so
this occurs in our cells also when we're exposed to sound, where the geometries in our body and the liquids in our body crystallize in different ways. And so sound is influencing the geometric patterns. But then also conversely, when you build certain acoustic sites like buildings and temples and recording studios and the kind of materials and the proportions in the room, you know, you give rise to heightening or muting certain tones. There's a very special dynamic that occurs in the way that the form dances and that sounds interact in the room, as we see like when we experienced in Egypt going into different rooms in the temples and those rooms having different resonances. So I feel that geometry and music by the adepts and the ancients, they knew how those two interacted, but in modern world, those subjects are not taught together and it's very fragmented in most people's minds. Although they can sense intuitively that there's a connection, they were never taught or didn't take classes that showed that connection. And it's unfortunate because it's basic to life. It's what I would call like life 101 is how form and resonances and shapes and music pervade the whole universe. Seems so obvious to me. How could anybody miss it? But that's why things like the Da Vinci Code and books and films are coming around now, because people are waking up to these formative forces and knowing that it's their birthright to know about it.
And
does that answer your question, Summer?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's very good. I might get into it in a little more detail, but you know, it leads me off on another trail, which I think is even more important. And that's that. It's not just sacred, as you mentioned. It's not just sacred geometry or geometry and sound. It's also the relationship of everything, of consciousness and the chemistry and light and color and how it all relates, because, I mean, that's really, the essence of life, and that's, you know, that it seems like that should be the perspective that all schools start with.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like here's one subject, here's another subject. They should start like, okay, here's how it all fits together. Now let's start talking about the branches of the trees.
And that, you know, gets into the political orientation of schools, whose primary or intent sometimes is not to foster interconnectedness.
Uh-huh.
If it were, the subjects would be different, and how the subjects are treated and taught and dealt with would be very different. There's a lot of disinformation and things that to perpetuate certain belief systems and in the sciences and other areas that are, you know, been proven erroneous today. You know, things that I studied when I was younger that I sensed were not correct have been proven to be incorrect. And so it's like, what is the intent of anybody educating? Is it to wake people up to their birthright and how the universe works so that we can be conscious co-creators and participants, or to have people be fragmented and disconnected with a lot of disinformation and not really see how the dots connect? And a lot of the powerful beings like Leonardo da Vinci and others, part of what their magic was is the fact that they observed nature and were able to repeat those patterns in their art and in their buildings and sculptures and science, so people could see the workings of the universe being duplicated as best as possible by humans with human means and skills and materials.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a tremendous impact on your consciousness when you see a building that's reflecting the same proportions that are in your body. There's an innate connectiveness as opposed to, I would say, architecture that creates ill effects because it's out of step with nature and out of it's not really harmonious, actually.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. It makes me think of the fact that they say that the cell phone frequency is actually very close to the same as the Schumann resonance, which is the resonant frequency between the Earth and the ionosphere, which is an electromagnetic frequency that actually entrains every bit of life into that frequency because it's so prominent in our atmosphere. And
yeah, the ohm of this world, so to speak.
Right. But, you know, some people say that, you know, using the cell phones, making the cell phone be that frequency is kind of wrong because it makes us want to put it closer to our head and then fry our brain.
Yeah, microwaving our brains, you know, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the cell phones, you know, on one level could have, they could have chosen a different window for the frequencies that would at least be life-affirming along with any electromagnetic interferences. And let's say the detrimental side, they could have designed it so that it had the best possible life-supporting aspect of it and still was functioning within the electronic and world that it's in.
Mm-hmm.
But that
you
wasn't
know,
the orientation.
I think this is like the one of the most important themes, and that is that to tap into the patterns of nature, because a lot of people think when we talk about geometry, you know, people don't really often think of how tied into nature geometry is, you know. I mean, because most people think of fear from their classes in geometry.
Yeah, happy to pass tests. Well, in disconnected geometry, they don't see the connection in their body and in the rest of life. You know, something in a textbook, and you know, part of the math phobias and number phobias that are unfortunate, they get passed down in certain types of school programming and indoctrination, as opposed to something that would have people see how number and proportion and is unique to the universe and should be something that people get excited about.
Uh-huh.
So why
yeah.
was the soccer ball for an international sport designed the way it was?
Uh-huh.
It has reasons,
uh-huh.
you know, in the geometry there. But I think what's fundamental as far as using the word nature here is that people are cut off from nature.
Uh-huh.
And in their illusion of separation, that split from nature would be one of the reasons to why they wouldn't look to nature, because they're trying to conquer it or they're afraid of it instead of embracing it and really looking at nature and taking care of nature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the byproducts of this study, is one generally would want to take much better care of the physical world
mm-hmm.
and respect
you know,
it and honor it.
and it's more than just nature. It's kind of the entire universe, and you know, on a micro and macro cosmic level. Because
yeah.
You know, I remember after taking your class, I remember a really major experience where I went out camping, and I looked up at the stars. And normally, when you look at the stars, it looks like a lot of chaos. And for the first time, it just hit me that it's not chaos at all. There's an incredible amount of order in the way all of our universe is created, the way the Milky Way is created. I mean, our solar system, the Milky Way, the universe. I mean, it's all unbelievably ordered. And that not only is that order up there, but that same order is reflected inside me in every cell. And all of a sudden, I was laying there looking at the stars, and I just felt like, oh, my God, you know, I'm totally connected. I felt totally connected to everything. And not just,
well,
you know,
people have said that, you know, that, and I haven't seen all of the direct knowledge of this, that the star patterns are reflected in our DNA. And
uh-huh.
that people who live south of the equator are, they visibly see a different part of the sky, like the Southern Cross and such.
Mm.
And as a result of what they actually visibly see that we don't see in the Northern Hemisphere, it affects their consciousness differently.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
I imagine if one's traveling a lot, they would probably get more of a balance of the celestial field. I mean, in terms of direct sight, it still has an influence even when we don't see it directly, but I would imagine it would be heightened. And there's a book out called The Star Mirror, and it's a wonderful title because it talks about the different temples on Earth that were placed on Earth in the same relationships as particular stars. For instance, the most famous one is perhaps the Three Pyramids in Giza, lined up with the Belt of Orion. And the Giza Pyramid, the big one, is the middle star in the Belt of Orion. And then when you measure that, it's the same angles and same proportions as it is in the sky. And that's what the star mirrors, that they were mirroring on Earth what they saw in the heavens to bring heaven to Earth.
So that follows that if the stars are mirrored inside our cells as well, that you're almost like doing acupuncture by building a sacred site on these spots.
That's the analogy that I often give, that placing sacred sites on particular places, doing acupuncture on the planet, and we're a microcosm of the planet, so it's whatever we do on the planet is affecting our cells as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of people talk about the sacred grid that is built around the Earth and how the Great Pyramid ties into that. What do you know about it? Because I've heard that, you know, that they're rebuilding this grid around the Earth, these higher beings, but I don't really know too much. Do you have any opinion?
That was one of the first things when I got into sacred geometry. Becker and Robert Becker and another author wrote a book about the world grid, and actually had written me a letter at one time before I was really prepared to go public with the research that I was doing there. But that was one of the early books that I read when I got into sacred geometry. And it shows the geometric layout of the planet and the way the Earth, let's say, at this point, and where the continents are and where different sacred sites are and how those sacred sites fall in the vertexes and the junctures of this geometric grid that's a combination of pentagons and hexagons and triangles. It's a combination of dodecahedrons and icosahedrons interpenetrating. And in the 70s, the Russians mapped that. And they had the first map of the geometrics of the Earth grid. And supposedly, by all the different stories, advanced ancient beings were responsible for constructing this grid. And what I found was interesting is that life forms don't just evolve. According to some of the studies, the grid has to exist prior to the life forms, and that grid holds the field. And then once that field is established, then life can take on different dimensions and forms and expressions, but the grid has to precede it. And in the grid also means archetypes in other words, blueprint patterns and blueprint cookie cutters, so to speak, for what the life forms are. That if the grid hadn't been constructed, certain kind of life wouldn't just automatically have developed on Earth. Advanced beings had to construct a light grid, energetic grid, help develop the ley lines so that they flowed in certain ways on the Earth, help guide the vortex energies in the planet that are created from tetrahedral fields that are rotating and counter-rotating in the Earth. And But so when you get all done, there is a phenomenal geometric grid from the ancient world. But the problem is with cataclysms that have occurred and continents that have drifted and various wars and other kinds of things that have happened, as well as acts of nature and so on, many of the temples have been destroyed or harmed in such a way that they're not functioning the way they need to. And some suggest that they need to be torn down and rebuilt. Others have to be repaired. And some of the old temples are not functioning for the new grid that we need.
Mm-hmm. So there's a new grid that's being constructed?
You know, some say that the new grid is now like up above the earth, whereas some of the old grid was not only on the earth and went down into the earth. And then there's others that say that the new grid also penetrates down. But many people who are clairvoyant seem to see these geometric lines up maybe waist high or a little bit higher above the surface at where this new grid is being laid down that supposedly is influencing the future of where we are going and also is putting correction in and repairing problematic areas in the prior grid, because some of those problematic areas are like putting out negative energies because they're dysfunctioning. And sometimes when certain celestial alignments occur with the planets, if those corrections are not done, then those sacred sites, you might say, that are not functioning in a healthy manner amplify whatever's going on with the planets. And that also influences Earth cataclysms and weather and such.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big topic. Carl Monk is this fellow who has written books called like The Initiate Scrolls and a number of books, who's an archaeocryptologist. And what he discovered in studying most of the sacred sites on Earth is there's a mathematics to the longitude and latitude placement of all these sacred sites. And he's mapped that out in detail and shows exactly what the math is. And you can confirm it with satellite photos. And it, with that grid, it's centered around the Giza Pyramid is the 0360 center of the old Earth grid. That's not to say that it also doesn't have some functioning in the new and future grid, but at least relative to the old grid, the center of the Giza Pyramid is the greatest point of landmass from the equator and from the polar circumference. They meet right in the middle of the Giza Pyramid. And when Greenwich, England was chosen as a grid center, it's like 31 degrees, 8 minutes, 0.08 seconds off. And when you, in order to understand the world grid, you have to get back and use Giza as the marker. Otherwise, you won't understand the grid math if you reference it to Greenwich, England.
Mm-hmm. So I was just reading something from Greg Braden that, he's saying that it's really the poles are shifting now, that the actual North Pole is moving quite a bit every year now, and that we're actually in for a great pole shift, looks like very soon, and then that could actually throw off our entire our conscious, make us lose our memory in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me think, one of the things about raising our consciousness is to be able to hold our field.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely true. And how important we are in holding that field, that we're the grid holders, and that our consciousness matters. And even if the temples fall apart or are destroyed, our body temples and our consciousness and our connection to Source, we are the sacred site.
It's
because we have all the geometries that those sacred sites are built on, built into our body anyway.
So
but a lot of people
question.
Don't want to think that human beings matter that much. The history of a lot of controlled thought in the world has been to diminish who human beings are and not feel that they actually could matter in that kind of a way. But I feel that our ability to hold the field, to create the field and hold a prayerful way of for the universe has averted many of the catastrophes that have been predicted.
So it's interesting. I want to ask you the biggest question is, what's the best way to do that? But before that, I just read something from Patricia Cota Robles, and she was saying that at least 95% of the people on the Earth are actually really wonderful beings, and they're really, you know, they're really wanting to do good, and they really appreciate love and compassion and everything. But it's just, you know, the ways of society that's just, you know, keeping people down. There's these patterns that have been going on for so long, and so I guess the question is, you know, what's the best way that we can help hold this field for ourselves and for the planet? As for, I mean, you can say it like personally and for, you know, everybody. I know that's a big question.
Well, I just know that you're right now, according to, when I'm listening to you, your sound is breaking up. I don't know if something changed in the mix.
Oh, I can hear you well.
Okay.
Is it still breaking up now?
Yeah, it's still breaking up a bit. I can hear you, but it's breaking up.
Maybe what we should do is...
Now I can hear you clearly.
Now you can hear me better. Okay.
Yeah, and I did understand your question about
what's
the best way that we could hold that grid.
Oh, that's funny that I was breaking up as I was saying that, huh?
Yeah. I look at synchronicities of things, you know. The universe's sense of humor is constant. You know. Well, I think, you know, the shifting into a place of responsibility and care for the planet for long term makes a huge difference. Any individual homework that people do to clear up their emotional unfinished business, you might say, and that's not to judge it, just to say that if it's unfinished, it's acting as a filter that as they're generating their reality, it's going out through that filter, and sometimes it will warp things and create different distortions and impacts in the reality. So as the different things that could be cleared up in someone, abuses from this and other lifetimes, so say if you subscribe to it more than this lifetime, things that have happened clear up in people's emotional field, the weather directly reflects that. Phil Callahan studied a lot of the war zones in the world, and he found that when the fractal, you might say the mathematic harmonic connection of an area breaks down, the worse it gets, the worse it gets. He didn't say it exactly that way, but in other words, when the soil gets polluted, it attracts more insect pests, the weather in the area begins to be more detrimental, less life-affirming, because the right mineral content isn't there. You cut down the trees and it doesn't have the shade to hold the moisture, and all of a sudden you have a desert because the trees are not holding the moisture in the ground and it's evaporating. And pollutants from everything from industry to various levels of toxins get into the area, and then they start attracting more and more negative stuff. So as he went around to these war zones, he was not surprised that wars are breaking out in those areas because of the amount of pollutants in the soil, the agriculture breaks down, the climate changes. So he's showing how basically the worse it gets, the worse it gets. So then as people go into these areas and they do prayers, like a lot of the work that Dr. Emoto has done with water, and they go into different areas and do prayers and start restoring the harmony in that area, all of a sudden the weather is a little bit different. The agriculture starts perking up and becoming healthier. The soils start changing, and more harmony starts being attracted to that area versus more and more disharmony. It's when people go into a place that has a lot of unfinished, you might say, negative energy, there's a chance for people to argue. Like going into a restaurant where a couple is at a table and they were just arguing, they get up and leave, and the way people set the table, but they haven't cleared the field, and another couple sits at the same table, and all of a sudden they start arguing. Mm-hmm. And then the third couple sits at that table later, and they start arguing, or people, whatever. because they're sitting in this unfinished emotional energy, and that, to me, is a really good example of the same type of thing that's happening on the global scale.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So I'm saying that the emotional homework that people do to create a more beautiful field by letting go of resentments and hatreds and various things like that changes their emotional pH in their body as well as their physical pH, and that has a big, huge impact on their household, their community, and, you know, depending on who the person is, a greater and greater circle of influence.
What's the best technique that you use to release emotional stuff? Or do you have emotional stuff?
Yeah. I guess, you know, sure. And things have come up at surprising times that, you know, you're trucking along and there'll be something you didn't even know was in there. You know, I've taken millions of seminars, you know, since the 70s, you know. I go, oh, finally, my last seminar, finally, I'm done with that. And then something else will come along. I go, wait a minute. So the thousands and tens of thousands of dollars that I've paid in seminars, that shouldn't be coming up, you know. So that'll happen when people travel and they go to areas that they've lived in other lifetimes, and it starts evoking things and all kinds of changes. So, you know, I have people that I consult with to help work with that, and I have lots of personal meditative techniques that I use to go in and talk to the inner components in my, you know, the inner male, female, the inner child, the inner adolescent, the young adult, for instance, my higher self, and I do a lot of work dialoguing and talking and working with those components. And then I also use geometric shapes and music and sound, tuning forks and things to break up, let's say, stuck energies in the body. And when generally when those energies start flowing again, and the emotions flow in a good way and don't get stuck. And sometimes I've done things like, you know, even regressions where I've had to go back and visit something and change my perspective on it. One of the biggest changes is changing our belief systems, finding out what belief systems that we have in place that could generate the kind of reality that we're seeing. And when we change the belief system, you know, the pattern starts changing. So it's a combination of different techniques depending on how severe and what shape I'm in at the time and where I am, you know, whether sitting in traffic, you know, or,
right.
you know, or, you know, whether you're in a place where you can go into a quiet place and reflect and go inward. But I think that's basically it in a nutshell.
I've been starting to recently, especially over the last year or a couple of years, I've been really starting to wonder, or I keep thinking, and I talk to people, and a lot of people say not necessarily, but I keep thinking that instead of doing so many techniques to release stuff and to really, just work on specific issues, what if we just connected to the spirit and we do techniques to connect to spirit and love and light? And if we just do that enough, won't all of the other aspects fall into alignment?
Well, I do that kind of connecting, but it's like mm-hmm. a flashlight. You know, it gets in there and it shows areas of resistance that are resisting that light, and they can more gracefully, let's say, fall away or complete,
or you can shift
your perspective to where it's not a problem. It's like a non-event. It happened, but, you know, through love and forgiveness. But when you bring a lot of light to it, it starts shedding light on the things that many of us would just as soon not know ourselves, let alone have somebody else know, you know, depending on our comfort levels and how we process. But I think the more light we shed, the more the parts that want to come into the light work their way out of the closet because they want to come into that light, and then they make themselves known for the very reason that they want to be embraced rather than estranged or cut off or compartmentalized. They want to come back into a place of wholeness. It's natural in that process. The more light we crank up, the more these other shadowy aspects start coming out, you know. And sometimes they want to retreat. Yeah. But other times, you know, the light will shed light on them, and then we have to take love to them and talk to those parts and get in rapport with it rather than be afraid of it, because then we become more. And then the shadows aren't something to become afraid of as an enemy. They become allies, and then they transform. And I think that's the basic journey.
It's interesting because I think ideally, I mean, if you could just go into the light and invoke love, I think that's really critical for people that can do it or any work that's being done, because like you're just saying, it helps, it eases the process. But it makes me think of the work of Abraham, where they say that you can't just go from, you know, being depressed to being in bliss. You know, it is a step by step process.
There's a tone scale, an emotional tone scale. There's a book called Choose Your People that I read back in the 60s, 70s. And it starts, it has apathy at the bottom all the way up to enthusiasm and high states at the top. And as you move up and down that tone scale and then choose your people, Matt, you know, look, see who you're resonating with. And if you're hanging around a lot of people whose emotional tone is in a particular place, then by that sympathetic resonance, you know, you tend to go into a harmonic with them that could detune your field one way or another. And it was a very impressive book because the basic concept is easy to grasp even without reading the book. But the tone scale was really, really fascinating. I had an experience recently in another country, and we went to some sacred sites to clear some things where human sacrifice had happened. And several of us who did that clearing, when we came back home, got sick. You know, we tried to keep our fields clear and bring a lot of light to it. And this was an area that perhaps in history there was lots and lots of interesting rituals that had taken place there, creating a very destructive emotional field that had not cleared. And around a half a dozen of us were involved in seeing that we could do something to lift that, that would help the whole area, help the agriculture, help the people, and so on. But several of us got sick, and one of the people had been there at one of those sacred sites, and where they cut the heart of the priest out. It's sort of like that's what they do, whether they considered it to be an honor at that time, and somebody decides to sacrifice and they get their heart cut out. But anyway, he experienced that at that site, and then about a month later had some heart trouble and had to do some healing work to clear that. I mean, powerful, powerful, because it's like he confronted a previous life where he had died at that location, and here he was visiting that location again. But any work that he did to clear himself, I'm sure, helped clear the site. That's what I'm saying in this.
I see. Well, this, it seems like it might be a good time to play some music. I think we've got these songs queued up that of the album that you just finished, because this will, I think, will bring in a good resonance here.
Yeah, this was for Jan Sircone and her project As Above, So Below, and Mark Deutsch and myself, Joel Andrews and Eric Bates, and worked on that to support her in getting her first professional sound healing recording. So it's not just a music CD. It's really a tool, a sound healing tool, actually, is what it's designed to be.
So I understand it's based around Mary Magdalene and the feminine, bringing in the feminine. Can you tell us a little more about it? I don't know.
Yeah, there are several things that are devoted. A piece that I had written, a song and that Jan wrote lyrics dedicated to Mary Magdalene, which is about the return of the divine feminine. Another song called I Am the Flow, which is all about that water and the flow of the goddess. And another one dedicated to Isis, and several to Isis and Osiris. So the Egyptian mysteries are deep in this. And, of course, the way the Magdalene mysteries connect with the Egyptian mysteries is very, very profound.
How's that?
Jesus and Mary Magdalene both took their initiations in the Great Pyramid. Yeshua or Jesus or whatever name you want to call him, Yeshua ben Joseph or what all, he was the last initiate to go through the full ascension ceremony in the Great Pyramid before they sealed the pyramid up and sealed that chamber that was logged in history. And before he did it, actually Mary Magdalene went through the initiation, so that when he was in the king's chamber for 3 days, for 72 hours, she stood vigil at the entrance to the king's chamber while protecting the field. And lots of the other disciples were there under the pyramids and around the pyramids, all at key locations, holding the field for this ascension level of awakening to occur through Jesus when he was culminating in being in the sarcophagus for 3 days and coming out of that and living through it. So, of course, most of the mysteries, Hebrew mysteries and other mysteries, came out of ancient Egypt, and then before that came from Atlantis, and before that came from Sirius, from the Sirius star system. So hence the name Isis and Osiris is from Sirius, and of course Akhenaten and Nefertiti and King Tut all come from that lineage, from the star system of Sirius. And those were some of the master builders of the earth grid. Some of the great beings that built the temples and oversaw that were from Sirius. So the mysteries connected with the divine feminine as they are in the Magdalene mysteries are intricately connected with the ancient Egyptian mysteries. And so Jan has put together a project to celebrate that and to take people on journeys through these songs to awaken different aspects of that. And of course today the whole feminine nature in the world must wake up in order to really have the planet become healthy, because it's been suppressed and repressed in many different ways in different areas of the world for so long that there's a tremendous awakening, not only in the females, but also it has to wake up in the males to embrace their feminine nature. And that's how we get away from destructive technologies and warring and hatred and things like that, by, again, re-embracing the feminine. So she's dedicated this whole recording project as a tool for that awakening.
Uh-huh. Well, we were going to play song number 5. I'm not sure what this one... do you know what this one's about?
Yeah, actually, Tim Gillette, that went on the Globe tour that we all did in Egypt, brought that song, and they were singing that chant down there. And so we decided to record it.
I actually know more about it than actually I guess you do, now that I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Fill me in.
You know, because you know, last year when we went to Egypt, we took like 20 people to Egypt with Randy and a whole group of us and Jan. And Jan and I were toning in some of the temples and doing for like 45 minutes toning, and then like the ceiling opened up and the light came in. And what was interesting, I was telling Jan today, that when this light came in to my system, it was like it completely enveloped my upper body with love and light. It was just completely... just this enveloping. And then we went back and got on the boat, and this energy was still there. And Jan started singing this song that Tim Gillette had said that was really important for this trip. And when she started singing that, the energy from the temple went down through the base of my spine all the way through my feet and completely enveloped my whole body and put me in complete love and light, totally, like every single cell in my body was healed forever. And so
yeah.
this song was kind of is really what it was, just an amazing healing that happened, an amazing invocation of love and light. In the system.
Well, it was our intent to capture a lot of that kind of energy in the recording so that it could potentially trigger that even when people are not physically journeying to the pyramids,
uh-huh.
but journeying in their own quiet space wherever they create sacred space.
Cool. So if our moderator's here, why don't we go ahead and play this song, and then I'll hold this energy from Egypt I'll transmit it to everyone on the air as we're listening. So go ahead and play it now if our moderator is there. Are you there? Oh, she might have disappeared. So it looks like she's not there. So we might have to continue.
She went into the light.
Yeah.
Before even playing it.
That's amazing.
That's intention.
Yeah. That's cool.
Do you think we can bring her back?
Yeah. Come back. Yeah. So, you know, one thing I was thinking about, we'll continue here, is there's a... You know, as far as back to the nature thing, I do want to ask you kind of what the main thing you're interested in right now as well. But I want to just touch on the nature, because you know, from being in your classes and also working on various projects, I've also having taught the physics of sound, I've come across three core elements that make up nature, and one is the pure tone, which is the sine wave for sound. That is the sine wave basically makes up every sound in the universe that is tone. I mean, there's noise also, which is not a sine wave, but sine waves basically are the core element that make up everything. in sound. And then in geometry, it's the tetrahedron, am I right?
Mm-hmm. The building block, yeah.
Uh-huh. The tetrahedron. And then in chemistry, it's hydrogen.
Yeah.
So I think of those as the three core building blocks of the universe.
My work in I would agree. My work in physics and the periodic table has been a massive study of the music in the hydrogen atom, in the hydrogen mm-hmm. molecule. I've done a lot of work on that in converting the wavelengths of the spectral lines of hydrogen into sound. And Fred Belk says that, you know, that's the molecule of consciousness, or the atom of consciousness is hydrogen. And the whole rest of the periodic table comes as a result of various levels of transmutation that occur relating to hydrogen as the building block. And then all the world of sacred geometry, all the forms can be built out of tetrahedrons if you know how to spin them and what to do. The entire Earth grid, photon belt grid or photon grid is structured out of a tetrahedral field. And the dynamics of how tetrahedrons move, like in planets and in star systems, I mean, this is something that science knows, how the tetrahedron moves in the Earth. That's where the 19.47 degrees south or 19.47 degrees north latitude is that belt of ring of fire where the main volcanoes are, because that's where the vertexes of the tetrahedral field in the planet come up to the surface and bring the energy from inside the planet out to the surface for renewal, for generating the ongoingness of the planet. So I totally agree with you. Those are three fundamental principles, and those are the three of the ones that I've been spending the most time on. And when Fred says he goes up on the Pleiadian chips, they uh-huh. play the harmonics of hydrogen to him, the colors and the sounds of uh-huh. hydrogen, and I've been really working on that part of it.
So when you say spectral lines, what does that really mean?
They have a way that they can take an element and do a burn, you might say, like almost like lighting a match with that element, and then that element gives off different colors, and then they have equipment that measures the frequency of those colors that are measured in wavelengths of light in either nanometers or angstroms. And then they'll produce charts that will show all the spectral emission lines of any element. And the entire periodic table has been charted that way. The last book that I had gotten on, that was in the 70s, the Mager study of the periodic table. I mean, iron has like 1,000 spectral lines. And
then are those spectral lines similar to the distance between the electrons around a nucleus of an atom?
It's different than that, but uh-huh. certainly the atomic arrangement has an importance in the way the geometry of the arrangement in the atomic lattice affects it, is part of it. But then eventually you get, what's kind of like what we're saying is the spectral lines of hydrogen represent the rainbow that hydrogen gives off.
Uh-huh.
And not all of it is visible. There's also lines that are in the infrared or the ultraviolet that are not visible that they also measure. And there's like 34 spectral lines of hydrogen that are visible, and all but three of them are violet, which I find very, very interesting.
So if you were to change, translate hydrogen into sound, how would you do it?
Well, one method, I mean, if you at least buy this aspect of science as being an accurate procedure, I take the speed of light in angstroms per second or nanometers per second, which is 3 times 10 to the 18th power angstroms per second. That's 3 with 18 zeros after it. And then I divide the wavelength of, let's say, the Balmer M3 red-orange line of hydrogen is 6.561 angstroms, and I divide that into the speed of light in angstroms per second. And then that gives me a frequency that's way up in the trillion of hertz, like 4.38, et cetera, trillion hertz. And then when I want to bring that down into an audible range, I just then divide it down by multiples of 2, octavizing it. If you divide it down by 2 40 times, you put it into the middle of the middle key, middle C range of the piano, giving you like a 415 and some decimal frequency, which gives you an A flat or a G sharp note. That's exactly what you get from that particular one. And then I took all the spectral lines of different elements and did that to it to see what the sounds were. And then I've made chimes and tuning forks and wind chimes and bells and things tuned to that to see what would happen. And they're people are fascinated by it to hear those sounds.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, Fred Bell, of course, has a sound that he's programmed into the Roland synthesizer, which is supposed to be that sound.
Well, that one that he's using is the main hum of the Palladian ships, which has
the main hum?
The main hum that the ship gives off.
Oh.
And what,
so it's
so
not
that
tied
was not
into hydrogen at all?
No. When they do the hydrogen, it's after he gets in the ship and he sits down in this special chair and they play the lights and the sounds to him. But the hum of the ship is tuned to 1,000 hertz fundamental, which, of course, when you octavize that down enough times by two, you get 7.8125, which is the Schumann resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Schumann wiggles and goes a little bit above that to, you know, it anywhere from 7.8 to, but just under 8, like 7.87, it's moving because it's something that's breathing and it's dynamic. The baseline, I found, is the 7.8125 hertz. And the King's Chamber, 125 hertz, is a lower octave of the 1,000 hertz, and it's a higher octave of that specific Schumann resonance.
Wow.
And so is Stonehenge. So a lot of the sacred sites are tuned to that brainwave. And they've measured them, and they found those frequencies there.
Wow. So when
that Palladian sound is fundamental. My theory is that why it's tuned to that is because if they're coming here, they're going to tune to our basic brainwave. And if they want to go to Mars, they would tune to Mars's brainwave.
Or a TV station that's just gone off the air, too.
Yeah. They'll get Orkin Mindy or something. Or the Jetsons.
Well, you know, this...
You know.
This, I mean, what you're talking about as far as back to the hydrogen, it just seems like, I mean, that's like such a major thing that if you can, like, take the consciousness and find the consciousness key within hydrogen and then make that into a sound and geometric shape that we could, you know, put that geometric shape around us in a virtual reality system.
Absolutely.
And have that sound going, that it would be it.
Yeah, I mean, hydrogen is volatile, you know. It's like the basis of the universe. I mean, that's what SETI, when they're looking out there for extraterrestrial messages, they broadcast on the hydrogen resonance frequency, assuming that an advanced civilization would recognize that, well, here's another civilization that's woken up at least to know that hydrogen is the most important single element and in the creation, and that the hydrogen resonance frequency, you know, what that means to the matrix. And one of the things that Fred mentioned in his book, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, was how when you wake up in the morning, the body's molecules are tuned to the hydrogen molecule in the red spectrum, and then it pivots on green all the time. And then as it moves towards sunset, once you get to sunset, it's now at violet. And then, you know, from that point until the next morning, it pivots from violet all the way back around to red again. So I took the red line of hydrogen, Balmer M3, and the violet line of hydrogen, which was Balmer M5, I think it was, or 6. I have to look at my note. Anyway, and they're in exact phi ratio, the golden mean between those two, in an 8-to-5 ratio, 1.6.
Wow.
And I converted that to sound and made sound tubes, and then averaged the two together and created a green that's the average of the violet and the red. And I made sound tubes. Now, he says that when you get jet lag, you know, the hydrogen molecule has just gotten out of phase in your body. So I'm hoping that in working with tuning forks and things tuned to the hydrogen sounds, it could help people rebalance their jet lag. Could you imagine if you, before you got off a plane, they could play that as a hum in the plane and it would tune you back in?
Wow.
You know, who knows where this could go? But I got my clue from Fred's work, and then I was teaching a class, and right there in the middle of the class, I calculated the whole thing, put it up on the board, and made the sound tubes, and people really like listening to them because they're in that golden mean relationship. That's something that people can connect with, because that's in geometry, the main geometric relationship that connects the whole universe is the phi ratio, or you know, the 1.618 to 1, basically golden mean proportions and all the different names of the golden mean, golden section, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is in hydrogen. And it represents the red to violet ratio.
So I'm still holding the field of connectivity from the past to the future. And it looks like we probably have only like another 5 minutes or so here. If what we could do is if our moderator's around, are you guys there? We could actually play song 10.
That's a wonderful one.
And to end the show. But I wanted to say before we did that, Randy Masters actually teaches at Globe Institute, where we have the whole sound healing and sound therapy program. We've got the summer program, which is a 5-week intensive program coming up June 18th. And then that can lead into the full associate degree. We actually start the semester in September and January also, where we have a 4-month version instead of a 5-week version. A 5-week version makes it so people can come in from around the country or around the world and just take it and then get a whole certificate with like 270 hours. So Randy's one of the main instructors on the staff there. And, really the main intention of the school is about raising consciousness on the planet, helping us as we move into this ascension, and really just help people understand more the relationship of themselves to nature and to love and the full interconnectedness. So any last thoughts you want to say before we see if we can play some music here?
Well, I'd love for listeners to be able to hear something, certainly, and we've had some great classes in the summers at Globe. You know, it's been really fun where people are coming from, so I'd invite people to participate, because usually it's quite a lively group and concentrated time. It's been just a blast, so and I thank you for continuing to support my teaching there and all the years that we've known each other, around 20 years or so of doing projects. So I'm very grateful, and I thank you very much for that.
So if our moderator is there, let's go ahead and play song number 10, and I guess that will just take us out. If not, we'll talk here for another second. And thank you all for listening, and may you all take the energy of interconnectedness from the past through the future into the evening and into the weekend, and then into the next week, and then into the next months and years and lifetimes. Enjoy this music from Randy and Jan and the whole crew. Well, we'll see if that's long enough pause. Are you guys there? Well, I guess they're not.